Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Rachel Andrew, a prominent writer, speaker, co-founder of Perch CMS, and an invited expert to the CSS Working Group. And we're going to talk about writing and publishing professional books today. This episode is brought to you by Extra, a social media automation tool for brands. What's the real cost of spending some of your most productive hours on social media management? Extra will drastically reduce the amount of time that you spend stocking up your social media queues, allowing you to focus on what matters most. Sign up for early access at extra.ai. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, it's good to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. Thanks for making the time. How about we start with the Blitz questionnaire to get to know you better, and then we'll jump back to the main topic.
Okay.
And question number one is, what do you do for a living?
That changes day to day. My main thing is Perch CMS. That's our product, which is a content management system, and I run that with my husband, Drew McClellan. So that's sort of the main thing that we do. As well as that, I do an awful lot of speaking at conferences. I speak at, I think it was about 37 events last year I spoke at. I'll be about the same this year.
Wow.
So I speak and I lead workshops and things on CSS and so on as well. So that's kind of a fair chunk of what I do. And also writing. I write for various publications as well as writing books. I write articles and things.
I have learned lately that you've authored 22 books throughout your lifetime. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's quite a lot of words.
Can you even recall them like in a row?
No. And then some of them I was a co-author on. And sort of in the early days of the web, particularly, and things were sort of changing very quickly, a lot of books were written by three or four authors. And so I wrote a fair amount about sort of front-end web stuff in books where there were sections about back-end things as well. And I wrote quite a lot about Dreamweaver back in the day.
I see. Tell us a bit more about your background. Where did you come from to become such a prominent speaker and writer?
It's all totally by accident. I originally trained to be a dancer, and then I went backstage. I worked backstage for a while in the West End, in the theatre there. And then I got pregnant with my daughter, and so while I was pregnant and wondering what on earth I was going to do with my life, I ended up with a computer. And so I started messing around with the web. And it was very much the early days of the web, so you didn't have very much to learn. It didn't take long to get to the point where you could build a website and people thought you were some kind of expert. And so I've been doing this for 20 years or so, just kind of teaching myself stuff and then teaching other people the things that I've learned. So that's really where it came from. And a theme all the way through what I've done has been that I've been learning and I've been finding out how to do things, and I've just written about it. I've written it down as I've done it, and then I've shared that with other people. And so really the speaking and the writing just came from me teaching myself and then thinking, oh, someone else might find this useful, and so publishing it in some way.
What does your typical day look like, if you have one?
There is no typical day. I'm very, very organized. So typically every day, actually, no matter where I am, I am very reliant on OmniFocus. I use that as a sort of to-do list. And I start every day by looking at that, working out what my main priorities are. And that'll depend on where I am. You know, I might be about to get on a 10-hour flight to San Francisco. And so what am I going to do during that flight? What actually needs achieving? Am I going to write something or what have you? Or I might be in the office. And actually, if I'm in the office, I'm often doing more like admin things. You know, I have to catch up on some accounting or, you know, make some phone calls. So I sort of start every day by looking at what I can achieve in that day, depending on the context that I'm in during the day.
I guess I would love to know, how do you go around so many trips throughout the year? Do you have any tips for managing and, you know, coping with those?
A lot of it is, for me, I try and stay sort of organized wherever I am. So I'll try and keep to a routine, do a lot of running. So, you know, it doesn't matter where I am, I'll get up in the morning and go for a run and try and sort of try and keep a routine, even if everything around me is changing. And that helps me to be able to also get work done and things when I'm in different locations rather than just thinking, oh, well, you know, I'm at a conference, I don't need to worry. Because when you do 30-odd conferences a year, you have to work as well. otherwise, you're not going to get anything else done. So, it's kind of being organized and kind of figuring out what works for you and when you can actually get work done. I'm an early bird. I get up early and get a few hours done before the conference.
Uh-huh.
So that kind of works well for me. I mean, for other people, you know, I know plenty of people who are only just going to bed at the time that I'm getting up because they work well in the evening and they'll come back from events and then sit down and do some work. So you have to kind of figure out how you work best with that.
I know one useful tip of yours regarding time zones. Could you please share it with other listeners?
Oh, I don't know what that is.
I love a tip of yours when you say that you live in the same time, like you don't switch your time zone when you arrive somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't always. If I'm going to like the East Coast of America, which is then 5 hours from where I am in the UK, I'll often only time shift about 3 hours. So I'll just get up really early. And that makes life an awful lot easier because if you're only going to be somewhere 4 days to try and make the time zone and then drag yourself back, you essentially just throw yourself into chaos. So if you can avoid time shifting too much, it makes you slightly antisocial, but it depends on the kind of events you're going to. I mean, quite often, you know, I'm going to an event, certainly like Event Apart, where they don't have very late evening activities going on. So it's absolutely fine for me to, you know, have dinner and then go off to bed at 8 o'clock. And that's not a problem. It doesn't make me sort of incredibly antisocial. It's not going to work everywhere because sometimes you need to be available for later events. But that does help if you can do it. If, you know, if that works, then it does certainly ease the time shifting.
As a side note, you've been to so many conferences. What are your top, like, 3 or 5 that you would recommend other people attend, like must attend?
Oh, wow. It's really hard, actually, because they're so different, and it depends on what people are wanting to get out of the event. And I absolutely love Event Apart. They put on wonderful events, you know, very, very focused events and very curated. And the people that come, it is, as a speaker, it's terrifying because it's like the keynote speech from every other conference, except every speech is like that. You know, every presentation is really solid and really good. So you really up your game when you speak for them. and you know, they're very, very good conferences. The attendees there tend to be mainly people who work for bigger companies. You get a lot of teams turn up there together. So it might be that if you're an individual freelancer, you know, you're going to prefer something like, you know, a CSS Dev Conf or perhaps Smashing Conf, you know, gets lots of people who are individuals who, you know, work freelance. So it's difficult to say, oh, you know, one particular conference is the one, because it really depends on where you are. And it's worth looking at the talks from previous events and saying, you know, are these the sort of things that are going to be speaking to me and where I am and the sort of things I need to learn before you buy a ticket for something, you know, so you are going to the right things for you.
Mm-hmm. Back on track, what do you like the most and the least about your work?
What do I like the most? I like solving problems, and no matter where that is, you know, whether that's in the work I do, the CSS working groups, or looking at CSS specifications and trying to solve the problems people have with building websites, or whether it's trying to solve the problems people have doing content management with Perch. That's kind of the kind of undercurrent of everything I do is, you know, how can I sort of make things easier and solve problems in different ways? That might be solving problems with words, you know, writing an article about something that people are finding really confusing. And helping other people understand that, you know, that's interesting. The things I like least are all the admin that I have to do, you know, running a business. You know, having to deal with things like tax and things from the government that I have to fill in. And, you know, all of that stuff, all of the other things that come along with having a business can be quite overwhelming. And it's, you know, it's not something I was ever trained to do, so I've had to learn how to do it, and that's probably my least favorite stuff, really.
I think that's a pretty common theme between a lot of our guests.
Yeah.
What is your next big thing?
Oh, man. You know, there's so many things going on. We've just announced another product called Noticed, which is for people who speak at conferences, somewhere to put their slides and also build up an entire kind of speaker portfolio, as it were. So that's something we're working on. I'm working on that with Drew. And then I'm sort of doing a bunch of work on CSS specifications at the CSS working group. So that's kind of something I'm really into. So there's always a whole bunch of stuff that I'm working on. It there's never kind of one big thing. It's just like lots of stuff that I've got my fingers in and I'm working on.
And of course, your upcoming book that is getting published like tomorrow as we're recording this, and probably a few weeks behind as you're listening to that, my dear audience.
That's it. I mean, that's the thing. I've sort of got a book coming out, and say once people listen to this, it'll be out, called the new CSS layout. And that's a book really about what's new in CSS for doing layout, a whole bunch of specs that are important to people, including CSS grid layout, which I've spent a lot of time talking and speaking about. That will be out by the time people hear this, and that is book number 22 for me, which will be out there, and is with a publisher. I've done quite a bit of self-publishing in the past as well, but this one is published through A Book Apart.
Wonderful. Congratulations on the new book. That's amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
So going back to the main topic, you just mentioned you've tried a traditional publisher route, self-publishing. Tell us, what were the takeaways from this experience? What do you prefer better?
Yeah, so I think it really depends what you actually want out of having a book. I mean, when I wrote my first books, people didn't really self-publish. It wasn't really a thing early on. So if you wanted to publish, normally, you know, a publisher would get in touch with you, and that's how I started writing. Publishers got in touch with me and said, would I, you know, write a chapter of a book? Would I write a whole book? And then we'd discuss it, and they'd give me an advance, and I'd go away and write the book, and then hopefully I'd get some royalties afterwards. And that was pretty much how people wrote. And then sort of over the last few years, the sort of idea of self-publishing has become more possible. You know, there are better tools for doing it and better ways to sell stuff online easily and things. I think it's become less important for people to go through a publisher, and particularly if people have already got a community of their own that they can sell their book to. You probably will make more money out of self-publishing if you're someone with a decent community and a good idea. You may well make more money out of self-publishing the thing than you will out of going through a traditional publisher, because you do not make a lot of money out of publishing a book. that's certainly not really the reason to do it. I think if you go through a publisher, you get all the other things done for you, which is nice. You know, you can just write the book and they will make sure it looks decent, and they'll you know, get it edited and all that sort of stuff, and they'll hopefully do some level of promotion around it. And you get a book on a shelf, which is quite nice, because they'll have the distribution network, so you can go into a shop and see your book, which, you know, if you're using it to help promote yourself as a person who does stuff that you're good at, having a book on a shelf is really valuable. If you're a freelancer and you walk into a client's office and you can say, well, you know, I wrote the book on this, and you can buy this on Amazon, and it's published by this named publisher, that's actually all quite useful. And certainly the books I wrote earlier in my life, all the things that were traditionally published, at the time I was just taking on web development projects. And a lot of my clients were actually design agencies, and I could walk into their office and see one of my books on their shelf before they'd hired me and say, oh, well, yeah, that's my book. I wrote that. you know, that is huge. And, you know, I didn't earn a huge amount of money from writing books, but I can't tell you, you know, how many jobs I did were related to the fact that I had books out there, and that people think, oh, well, this person must be an expert because they've got books. So I think that's a big reason to go with a publisher, is because the amount of distribution of your book you will get will be far bigger than doing it yourself.
That's definitely a very clear advantage. When you were just first approached for your first book by the publisher, what that, like, chicken and the egg, what did you do first? A lot of speaking, a lot of other work, or a book?
So really what I started doing was this sort of just writing things down, and that's why I got approached, was because as I was learning stuff, I was just writing it up on my own site. So, you know, just sort of little tutorials, how you do this and that, and how you used, you know, the CSS was really just a new thing. So, you know, how you format things with CSS, and I was just writing stuff up, and how you use Dreamweaver. Because at the time I was using Dreamweaver, so I was sort of writing how you did things in Dreamweaver. And it was because of that a publisher approached me and said, well, you know, would you write for this book? Because we've seen your writing and we really like it. So that's where it came from, was just me kind of sharing the stuff that I was learning. And that's, you know, they approached me. And I left school at 16. As I say, I trained to be a dancer. And so when I was approached by a publisher asking if I could, you know, write a book, I was thinking, well, you know, this is never going to work. You know, I'm not your obvious author, but they'd seen my, they knew that I could write, you know, and teach people this stuff. And that's what this really is. You know, I'm teaching people how to use things and the things that I've learned, really. And they'd seen that I was already doing that and were willing to take a chance on me. And like, yeah, 22 books later, here we are.
Right. So it wasn't chicken and the egg. It was from blogging. It helps you to both practice and get noticed for what you do.
Absolutely. I'm pretty sure I don't ever really understand anything until I've explained it to people. So actually just writing stuff is something that I kind of have to do, you know, and so it sort of makes sense to bring it to books. And the speaking came a lot later. I used to be very nervous of public speaking. I'm very much a writer first. And even now, all my talks start with a long-form essay, and then I turn it into a talk. I think best by writing a lot of words. And then I can start to break it down and turn it into something which is much more of a talk than a big essay.
Uh-huh. Going back to your books, if you are the solo author of the book, let's leave aside those when you're just like a contributor among other authors. Mm-hmm. So your books, how long are they? How long do they take to make? Like, what kind of process do you follow?
So they're all different lengths. So there's quite a trend these days to do shorter books. I mean, it used to be that, you know, you had to write these enormous tomes that no one was going to ask you to write a small book. People like a book apart of kind of popularized the fact that, you know, when you, if you're asked to write a giant book, then generally there's a lot of stuff in there which doesn't really need to be in there, but you're trying to make word count. So actually having these smaller targeted books that don't waste people's time is actually a really useful way to go about things. So these books tend to be a bit shorter, but for me, I just start with, as I would with anything I'm writing, you know, even a blog post or anything, just what am I trying to teach here? You know, what do I want the person who reads this thing to be able to go away with at the end of it? You know, what's the value they're going to get? And from that, I can then start to, and they're technical books, so then I start to think, well, what examples do I want to show to get that point across? You know, how am I going to break that down so it becomes something that's pleasant to read rather than just a load of code in a book? It's sort of just trying to, but always trying to keep that, what should someone be taking away from reading this, you know, to mind all the time. What's that core message? And say that works pretty much the same way for blog posts and for conference talks as well. You know, what do I want people to get from this?
I know specific word count might not be, you know, a good question to ask, but I'm sure our listeners just want to hear the number. Like, is a decent book, is it like 10,000 words? Is it 15,000? Is it 30,000 or 60,000 words, like a novel? You know, what kind of ballpark figure should they think about when they talk about a book?
Probably around 20,000 to 30,000 for your sort of average sort of web books. These sort of that's a relatively shortish book, but that's probably around average. I think most of these things are around 20,000 to 30,000 words, something like that. But then, you know, there are people publishing mini guides of around 5,000 to 10,000 words and things. It's really, if you're self-publishing, you need to just define what the scope of the thing you want to get across is, because adding words just to make a big book isn't particularly useful.
Exactly. Exactly.
Know, because actually, people don't want to read a big book. What people want is they want the knowledge that you're going to pass on to them. And now, some things require a lot of words, or some things are kind of like a collection. I mean, one of the books that did incredibly well, and actually did four editions of, was the CSS Anthology. And that was like 101 solutions, basically. So each little solution was like a separate thing. And the idea of that book wasn't that you read it from beginning to end. It was that you were like, oh, I want to do this type of thing on a web page. How do I do it? And they look in the book and find out how to do it. So that's a very different kind of book. And you can have quite big books that are more like a kind of reference-y type thing like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it does depend on what you're doing. And yeah, I mean, how long that takes someone to write really depends on, you know, the individual. I write pretty quickly, but I spend a lot of time thinking about this stuff and not so much time sat typing. I'm a runner, so I'll go out for a run and pretty much I think about this stuff while I'm doing other stuff. So by the time I get to the point of thinking, right, and, you know, I want to write, you know, really get a chapter down today. By the time I sit down to do that, I usually pretty much know what I'm going to write and I'm then just writing it. I'm not sort of thinking how it should be at that point. So although I probably spend a lot less time sitting typing than most people, I do a lot of thinking before I get to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's perfect. When I sat down to write my first book in 2013 in the fall, I was guided by Nathan Barry's authority book, which I think mm-hmm. is a wonderful guide. But one thing they omitted that you started with is that the book needs to solve a specific problem people have, not just lay out everything you know on a specific subject, but rather help people in a very narrow topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of your books are exactly like that. They're practical and to the point.
Yeah, I mean, I like solving problems. I like helping people solve problems. I like giving people the ability to do that for themselves. So that's very much how I tend to write.
When you think about, you know, how am I going to help people? There are a couple approaches there that people advocate for. One is, you know, write a sales page for your book before you start writing, or write your outline first before you set out. What do you exactly do?
The sales page is an interesting one. I mean, particularly if you're self-publishing and you're going to actually be doing that, well, that's a useful thing to do. But also that sales page, hopefully, is going to be about that problem that you're solving, because that's why people are going to buy it. And so that can really help. I think the same with products as well. You know, if you write the sales page, you're saying, well, these are the things that this is going to contain, and therefore these are the problems I'm going to solve. And you can make sure that you are actually doing that as you write the book. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty much that same sort of thing. It's saying, well, these are the things that are really important here, and let's sort of write that out at the beginning and then come back to it and make sure we have actually solved those problems. And I think, you know, outlining stuff, I mean, I tend not to write very strict outlines. Publishers like to have an outline from you, which I always think, yeah, I'm not quite sure yet how this outline's going to be. And you sort of end up writing something and you hope it's about what it's going to be, and end up changing it. But at that mate, I think I've sort of seen writers who create an outline and then kind of fill it in, and that helps them sort of see the progress through the book, which, you know, if that works for you, that's a reasonable way to do things as well.
Tell us a bit more about the editing process. So you've been doing things on your own and helping and getting help from the publisher. Like, have the publisher's help actually been helpful, or has it hurt your ideas? What's your experience?
Editing's great if you get a good editor. I mean, with technical books, you end up with two things. Usually you end up with someone who's a technical editor who makes sure that, like, your code is correct and you haven't just added anything stupid in there, which is always possible when you're writing that amount of stuff. You know, even just like errors put in by Word, you know, as you've copied code into the document, you know, and it's all gone messed up. Sometimes it's hard to spot that yourself. So you'll have a technical editor who hopefully will run all the code and make sure that all the code is correct and that you're following best practices and you know, just all that sort of stuff. And also catch places where maybe you've failed to explain something. You know, it's just like you're just assuming that people have this knowledge, and a good tech editor will do that. And then you'll have someone, hopefully, will do a copy edit on it and make sure that, yeah, you know, your grammar's correct and things. And typically you get a lot of that with a publisher. If you're doing it yourself, you have to decide, you know, whether you want that and if you're going to be able to pay for it. Because obviously if you're publishing your own book, you've got to go and find those people and pay them to do that work. So, you know, if you're writing for yourself, that's a consideration that you're going to have that outlay before you publish, whereas with a publisher, that'll just be included in the package sort of thing. But good editors are wonderful people. I mean, I'm an accurate writer and, you know, sort of used to doing writing, but it's amazing how much better a good editor can make you sound, really. So it's certainly worth having if you can do it.
I'd like to chime in that a lot of editor services are available for not so much money online, because for some reason the copywriting industry is terribly underpaid, from what I think. Mm. So you really can find great people for less money than you think. Try and go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it is important, and particularly if, for instance, English isn't your first language. Also, just writing English for international audiences is a skill in itself. I mean, I'm obviously British. I tend to write in kind of American English because most of the people reading technical books are going to be, they're either going to be American themselves or they're used to reading American English because English isn't their first language, but people tend to read American English rather than British English. And American English tends to have a shorter sentence structure and things, which actually simplifies the language a little bit, which is actually useful. But so I think an editor should help you with that kind of stuff as well. You know, trying to keep you sounding like you, but making sure that the way you're phrasing stuff is going to be understandable to people who maybe don't speak English as their first language.
Absolutely. We had a guest here, Joe Leach, who specializes in international UX. And I do clearly recall an article of him which is called like Writing for International Audience. I'm going to link to that in the show notes. It's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, that's quite an art, and you get better at that as you go along, and you realize, oh, that's a very long sentence. That, you know, I need to do something about that. things that would be absolutely fine in an essay for school, you know, perhaps a little bit too wordy when you're writing a technical book that you want to be very, very clear for someone to understand.
I had a conversation with Sean D'Souza, an author of The Brain Audit, which is one of my favorite books, and the way he defines great writing, which I would probably never comply to, is splitting down the educational parts of the book with the entertainment. So he draws up those pretty pictures, and he introduces funny stories along the way. Which writer do you classify yourself as? The entertaining writer or down, concise, to the point?
I think I'm very much to the point. I guess I write the sort of stuff that I would like. You know, I want to have clear knowledge. I think it's nice to read people's personal kind of anecdotes of how they've implemented stuff or how they've used this information, rather than just kind of rewriting the specifications, for instance. Actually writing about how it is to use this stuff. You know, and so any kind of where I try and bring sort of a bit more interest into things is that just that personal knowledge. You know, I've got a 20-year history working on the web, so I can kind of bring some of that into my writing, and the things that I've tried and that haven't worked or have worked well, and kind of explaining that along with showing the technical stuff. So I try and bring that kind of personality into it, as opposed to sort of entertaining or funny. That's not really me.
Right. And the whole storytelling thing, so it boils down for you to providing examples from your expertise, from your professional life, right?
Yeah, so that's it. You know, just trying to illustrate the sort of technology with real things, actual things that happen. And because I think, you know, everyone's got those things. Everyone's got those, you know, where they've solved a problem and can share that. I think those are some of the most interesting stories. If, you know, people getting into writing, you know, talking about how you've solved a problem and what you found out along the way and what didn't work, you know, what went horribly wrong and what won't you do again? Because that's going to help other people, and it's interesting stuff because it's real stuff.
Speaking of illustrations and cover art, do you have any takeaways, judging by, you know, experience of 22 books?
Yeah, I've never really, it's not something I ever get into with the publishing stuff. I mean, usually they'll say, oh, you know, is this okay? Does this look okay for the cover? And I'm like, oh yeah, probably. I'm not really a visual person. I'm very much a developer. So you know, my new book is purple because most of my things that I've done myself have always used these sort of various shades of purple. And they were like, what color do you want your book? And I'm like, oh, make it purple. And so it's purple. but yeah, I mean, And so that's something I struggle with a lot. If I'm doing stuff on my own, any sort of illustration or art, it's just not my thing at all. And so if I wanted to do something that was highly illustrated, I'd absolutely need to hire someone to do that. I can barely use a graphics program. I've been trying to learn Sketch a bit to make examples for the specifications I work on. And it's a painful process for me. It's just not my thing at all. I like code. I'm not very good at making things look pretty.
I guess the big takeaway for the listeners is do not try to do it yourself if you've not been doing like it for life, you know.
Exactly. I mean, there are lots of people you can get to help with this stuff. And that's, I think, if you want to do things that are well outside of your own skill set, that's where you have to think, you know, who can I get to do it? And it's an advantage of working with a publisher, because you do get to tap into a lot of other people that you have to find yourself if you're publishing by yourself.
With both the publishing and self-publishing experience, what did the launch process look like for your books? Do you have anything that went spectacularly well, or some big failures?
So it's strange actually when you self-publish, it's all on you, and it's pretty much like launching any product.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can decide, you know, sort of do a launch sequence. Things tend to happen faster because you're in control of the whole thing, so you can decide when you want to do things and on which day. You've got all the information. For instance, my book that's launching tomorrow has been on pre-sale. I don't actually know how many copies have been sold in the pre-sale because I don't have that information. I'm sure I could find out if I went and asked the publisher and I'm sure they'd tell me. But when you publish your own stuff, like, you know how many people are coming to your landing page and who's signed up, or, you know, if you've got a pre-order, how many pre-orders you've got. And so I think doing your own stuff, there's a bit more of that excitement because it's your thing and you can look at all the analytics, you can see, hopefully, you know, that the order's coming in. When you work with a publisher, it can be a little bit harder to get excited about that process because you don't have the immediate feedback. It's like you're doing stuff to promote this book, but you can't go and look at a graph and see the numbers going up, which I think is a nice, it's one of the nice things about launching stuff, is that immediate feedback when people start to be interested, you know, whether they're just signing up for a pre-announcement thing or whether they're actually buying. You know, that. So that's, I think, the sort of key differences. And it'd be great if more publishers kind of came up with ways to get authors more involved, because to me it always feels a bit like once you've finished writing it, then you hand it over to the publisher, and then you kind of don't really have so much to do with it anymore because they're in control of the launch. Whereas with your own stuff, you get to do all that, and that's kind of the fun bit, really.
Absolutely. For self-published books, do you have any tips in mind that make promotion better? What can an author do to promote their book besides having their own list already?
I think making sure that you mention, I mean, whether you're publishing or self-publishing, it's, you know, making sure that everywhere you are that people know about the book. So that's, you know, putting it into your email signature, mentioning it if you are speaking or whatever, you know, mentioning it there. Making sure that it's mentioned just anywhere that you are, because hopefully you're writing about something you've already got a bit of a following about, and those people hopefully will be excited to know about the book. I think things like podcasts and email newsletters, and, you know, actually approaching the people who have those things and saying, oh, you know, I've got this new book. And if you're self-publishing, you can do all sorts of things, because you can set up maybe discount codes or do some kind of referral thing or what have you. You've got that in your hands if you're self-publishing. It's a bit harder when you're going through a publisher. So that's something that you can definitely do. And try and just look and see what your community can help you out with. Because, you know, I think we all like to promote each other's stuff. So you've got your list and your community, but you've probably got the communities of quite a few friends who'll be happy to help you promote it as well.
Right, but at the same time, it's kind of, friends are friends, of course, but just emailing your list to promote someone else's book is a pretty, pretty big favor to ask. So make sure you don't abuse your relationships, because that's very easy to spoil.
Yeah. And I think the thing to do as well is to make sure that it's reciprocal. So you're saying, hey, you know, make sure you let me know when you've got your next thing to promote, because I'll share it with my list. And I think that's an important thing too, is obviously not constantly pestering your friends and saying, can you promote this and that, but also that they can see that you're someone who's promoted other people in the past and you're keen to do that. And it's something, I mean, I'm all about sort of promoting other independent creators of stuff, because it's hard to be an independent creator of stuff. So if I see people doing good stuff, and I will, you know, use my Twitter followers or post to my list if it's relevant or what have you, because, you know, I just think we have to support each other when we're doing this stuff, because there is enough, it's hard enough to do independent things on the web anyway. And so we should definitely help each other to do that. So yeah, I think as long as you're not the person who always asks and never kind of gives, I think it's kind of okay.
Exactly. For our listeners, as we are wrapping up today's episode, I would like to have, you know, a few inspirational quotes from you for them, because virtually everyone, more people than they think, can write a book and reap enormous benefits from that. Can you give some encouragement and, you know, general advice for those people who have not yet published a book in their life?
I think, you know, if you can write a blog post that, you know, people are getting in touch and saying, oh, you know, that was really helpful, that solved a problem, then you can also write a book. You know, there's no great mystery to it. It's reasonably hard work. You need to be able to sit down and do the work. I think that's probably the thing that stops most people publishing a book, is that, you know, there is a reasonable amount of needing to sit in your chair and write the thing. And that's all the fun of promoting it and sort of, you know, actually having a book in your hands that's yours and that you created, that does sort of sit after all that work of sitting in the chair and writing the thing. And so I think that's probably the biggest reason. And I think, you know, find the ways that you have to help yourself to do that work, whether it's just to break it into chunks. You know, some people do self-publishing where they actually publish the thing in real time. So they'll be publishing chapters of it at a time, and getting people to initially sign up and sort of prepay for it so they get the book as it comes out. And that might help, because you get a bit of an ongoing kind of launch of each chapter, as it were, which can help. So I think you need to find how to do that, because, you know, it is reasonable hard work. And, you know, talk to other people who've done it, because they'll be able to give you some tips and also support, because we all know how difficult it is. But, it's a nice thing to do, because you end up with a kind of a body of work which is a bit bigger than just, you know, blog posts scattered around. And to actually be able to craft something a bit bigger is a nice thing to do.
Right, and actually promoting the book is about half of the work. It's not just like you write it and let it out. It's most like your success depends on how much you put into promotion. That's true for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the thing is, if you're writing a book, you've obviously got something you've got a lot to say about. And so a lot of the promoting can be, you know, writing blog posts and so on that are on the same kind of subject, because they'll get shared. And then making sure that at the bottom of each of those, it mentions, oh, I'm writing a book about this. If you like this, the book's coming out. You know, so you can use the stuff you're doing to also promote it as well.
Absolutely. Are there any resources, blogs, authors that inspire your writing efforts?
All the time I'm reading stuff, obviously online, about the subjects that I'm interested in, and quite often it's just, you know, individual writers, you know, maybe someone I'll say on CSS Tricks or on A List Apart, or, you know, one of these just recently I think, oh, you know, that was a really fantastic piece of writing. You know, they really explained this thing, and it can sometimes be things I don't even know anything about. And I'm reading it thinking, yeah, this is great. And I think when I find those things, I tend to just, you know, bookmark them and say that's a good bit of inspiration. And not that it's just a particular author, just that it, just, you know, in reading saying, you think that's been really well crafted. And I get to do quite a lot of editing I edit for Smashing Magazine, I edit for A List Apart, and reading other people's stuff. And when you get something that you know has just been really well put together, I find that very inspirational. It makes me kind of up my game. I'm like, you know, is my stuff as good as that I've just read? That's why I like editing.
Wonderful. Where can people find you and your work online?
So rachelandrew.co.uk is my website, and I try and bring together everything that I'm doing on there. I'm also at Rachel Andrew on Twitter. Which I tend to tweet when I'm doing various things. And yeah, my latest book is The New CSS Layout, and that's published by A Book Apart.
Wonderful. We'll link to that in the show notes. Thank you so, so much for sharing your insight and, making it more realistic and possible in the eyes of the listeners. Everybody should totally go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as I say, I left school at 16. I don't have any qualifications for doing this. So, you know, if I can do it, then really anyone can. And it's great.
Actually, everybody can, but totally not everybody does. And when I see someone online who actually did it, that is a totally wonderful qualification for hiring people who, you know, for just understanding that they have that effort, the ability to concentrate their efforts into something bigger and publish it, make it happen.
Yeah, definitely. I think you say it, there is a level of having to have your bum in the seat for a reasonable amount of time to do it. So shows some consistency.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Rachel, and I hope you have a great day.
Okay, thank you.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.